I'm Rick Sanchez. I've been doing news now for 30 years in two languages all over the world. Here in the United States, interviewed four U.S. presidents. I've also worked for several U.S. major television networks, and I believe, after all of that, that news should be honest and direct and impactful. That's why we call this Direct Impact. Let's start with this. When earlier this year, the World Court declared that the United States violated international law when it forced the freezing of assets of Iranian companies, it was sending a message, one that was essentially already repeated all over the world, because it's what so many around the world have already been saying, that the West and its banks are weaponizing assets like gold, oil, and even savings accounts. It's a bit of a worrisome trend, no doubt, right? One that has to do with our banks, because they're the ones freezing the assets, and even closing people's accounts. And for whatever their reasons, they're doing so to countries, they're doing so to companies, and they're even doing it to private citizens. Let me tell you what I'm talking about here. It's happened to this gentleman is named Elad Neharoy, right? That's his name. He lives in Los Angeles. And one day, out of the blue, he goes to log into his account with Bank of America, right? And he finds out that the account's shut down. It's shut down, shuttered. He can't even get in. So when he calls the bank, they have no explanation for him. Elad finally told reporters at the time, he said, "Look, I'm broke. I can't even feed my family because I can't get into my banking account." Now, to be fair, banks do on occasion freeze accounts over concerns from the police, suspicious activity, etc. But the numbers recently are way up. Is there that much more suspicious activity? Well, here, let me tell you what I learned. According to the Banking Policy Institute, over the past 4 years, more than 1 million people have had their accounts shut down. Americans. If you're asking, why was Mr. Nichorai's account shut down? The answer is it was done at the request of the FBI. The FBI. Eventually, after a series of media reports that determined that Mr. Nichorai had done nothing wrong, he was able to move his funds out of there and put it into another bank. But it's irritating. It's irritating to think that something like this can even happen, and that it seems to be happening now with more frequency.
Bank of America told me it was shut down. They refused to give me an explanation. They told me I would get my money after it was resolved.
Which he says he was told would take 10 to 20 days.
All of a sudden I find out I'm broke. I can't feed my family.
Now, let's take a look at something. Let's take a look at what's happening globally, which, by the way, is part of the reason that the U.S. dollar is kind of falling out of favor worldwide as well, because of asset forfeitures. But it's not just the U.S. The U.K., for example, is also accused in this alleged heist. There may be no better example of this than what the Brits did to Venezuela when they seized $2 billion in Venezuelan gold that was held in the Bank of England. Their pretext? Well, they were doing so at the request of Juan Guaido. And who the hell is Juan Guaido? He's some guy that the United States and the Brits decided one day to appoint as the new president of Venezuela. Yes, you heard that right. They appointed some guy as the new president of Venezuela, even though Venezuela already had a president named Nicolas Maduro. All right, so let's stop and think about this for just a minute, by the way. The U.S. and the Brits decide to name, out of the blue, a new president of Venezuela because they don't like the president who is there now. And then they seize the country's assets at the behest of the president they appointed. Now, look, whether you agree or disagree with Venezuela's present government or their politics, does any country really have the right to seize any other country's gold? And can their bank, who did so, ever be trusted again, after doing so? Then, of course, there's the reported $600 billion in Russia's assets frozen recently by the United States, the UK, and Canada. It marks one of the most significant sanctions ever inflicted on any country. And it leads one to ask if a questionable, controversial, or destabilizing invasion of any other country, be it the opinion of whatever other country, is reason enough to take away a country's assets. Well, then, lo and behold, we have to ask, I mean, just to be fair, as an American, why wasn't the same thing then done to us here in the U.S. after the United States invaded Iraq? I mean, there's the seizure of funds from Russian billionaires as well, or as they've come to be called in the Western media, Russia's oligarchs. Oligarchs is a funny word, isn't it? According to AP, some $30 billion in bank accounts, homes, yachts, and other assets have been seized from Russian citizens. $30 billion! Now, look, I'm no fan of Russian billionaires or oligarchs or whatever the hell you want to call them, for that matter. But what about U.S. billionaires? I mean, this really begs the question, doesn't it? Should anyone who profits from a war or corruption of any type have their assets seized? Okay, you want to go there? Let's do it. How about CEOs of Lockheed Martin, Boeing, General Dynamics, Raytheon, who got the spoils of the useless and disastrous wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, just to name a few, where the U.S. deployed $8 trillion. And they got that. Let me say that again, $8 trillion. And if you want to find American oligarchs, by the way, there's plenty of candidates out there. In fact, you can look no further than this guy. See that guy right there? That's billionaire Harlan Crow. He was recently alleged to he's been buying off Supreme Court justices like Clarence Thomas with lavish vacations and yachts and trips around the world and even a house for his mother. This is such an important topic. And, you know, I think we've got the perfect guest to talk about this. Garland Nixon, friend of the show, veteran radio and political analyst, host of Critical Hour on Sputnik, joins us now to talk about this. The idea that we have come now to a point where our beloved country, the United States of America, can go around. By the way, we're not the only ones, but let's just start there. Literally freezing other countries' assets. In the case of what happened with Venezuela, for example, with their assets in the Bank of England, they literally just stole their gold. I mean, they stole their gold. What do you make of this? How would you characterize this trend, Garland?
Well, I think what we're looking at is this is the essence of the unipolar order. This is the essence of the rules-based order, U.S.-led world order, all of the euphemisms that Tony Blinken uses to talk about how the neocons view the world. Arbitrary application of the law as opposed to rule of law, wherein the U.S. can basically do anything they want to and no one can push back. The problem with that is that now there are alternative options for countries, alternative options for corporations. And so now that the options are there, in the past where a particular country, corporation, nation, etc., didn't have a lot of alternatives as far as international economic and banking infrastructure, that BRICS is rising, China, Russia, etc. And so they could get away with it before because people didn't have other places to sink their money. Now that there are other places to sink their money, people are simply going to look for other options that are safer.
What do you make of just the Bank of England case by itself? The fact that they literally, and the way they went about it was so fascinating. The United States and England get together and they name a new president of Venezuela. They say this dude Guaido is now your president. Then they get Guaido, the guy they named, not the people of Venezuela who elected him. No, the United States names a president, then gets that guy who they named to sign off on their seizing of the gold from that country, which he is not really the president of. Maduro is. To sign off on it, and then they seize, what was it, $2 billion, I think? Yeah, $2 billion in gold. Man, that just seems hinky as hell, doesn't it?
Yeah, and in addition, they also use Juan Guaido in a lawfare scheme to use the courts to grab CITGO, which is the international energy, powerful energy corporation that was owned by the Venezuelan government. They seized the money. Ostensibly, we were told that they transferred the money to Juan Guaido and his alternative government to run the country, whatever that meant. But it seems that most of the money of CITGO has disappeared. Again, what we have is simply a criminal international criminal scheme. And, you know, the reality is this is not new. In, I believe, somewhere around the 1914, 1930, somewhere around then, the United States literally invaded Haiti, physically went to their vaults and took the gold out of Haiti's vaults and brought it back to the United States. So, as I said, the big difference now is when the world sees these kinds of things, they look for other alternatives and options. That's the big difference. They've gotten away with this for so long that they feel that they can do virtually anything. And when we see hypocritical arguments that are made, whether it's about conflicts, international criminal justice, the UN, etc., that are made, the leaders of the United States are living in a past world. I mean, if you look at let's face it, look at the age of the Joe Bidens, the Mitch McConnells, the people who lead this country. They're still living in a time when they could get away with this stuff, and the world has passed them by, and we're going to pay the price economically.
I think what they're doing now is economic warfare, and economic warfare is very different from, you know, direct warfare. Now, I do know this has gone on for some time, especially in the Latin America with the CIA in places like Guatemala and Colombia and the Dominican Republic, et cetera, et cetera. But even in those cases, they were working usually with Marines who they had also sent in. The CIA was heavily involved. Now it just seems like it's banking transactions where we say ours is bigger than yours and we're just going to take what you got.
Yeah. Well, there's another major factor, I think, that's changed the game, and that is that the U.S. went after Russia. They went after, you know, there are three world powers, Russia, China, and the United States. And the United States finally, after going after, you know, smaller countries traditionally, going after countries that were unable to stand up to U.S. international power, they finally decided, okay, we're going to go after Russia, and we're going to take them down economically. And if you look at the if you look at the sanctions against China, the U.S. is literally saying we have this international economic infrastructure and we'll use that to take out the big guys. What that's done is that sent a message to all countries, such as, say, a Saudi Arabia, say the people, the billionaires worldwide who, you know, were parking their money in Dubai, the UAE, and they had it, some of it in London. It sent the message to them that no one is safe. International power players felt, okay, yeah, they'll go after the little guys. They'll go after some leftist countries in South America or Africa, but we're too big. They won't touch us. In going after Russia and China, they've changed the game.
And everything you're saying is true, but it always comes back to this. And this is what should bother all of us, not just me as an American. These things that my country is doing to other countries, which seem horrible, it's outright thievery, it seems to me, go unchecked because there is nothing in the system, neither our political players nor our media players, our supposed reporters and journalists, to cover it, to say it, and to fight for little countries out there who say, we're not going to stand up, we're not going to stand for this because it's wrong. And we're not supposed to be cheerleaders. We're supposed to be truth tellers. That's my biggest complaint with all of this, it seems, given what you and I do for a living, Garland. How does it sit with you?
Well, you know, the sad state of affairs is this, that the U.S. media is now simply an operation arm of the U.S. government, particularly the U.S. State Department and the intelligence communities. And what they do actually is they act as a medium to rather than cover what the government is doing, to cover up what the government's doing. I firmly believe that if the American people in the aggregate understood what their government is doing and understood why, that it would be rejected. So we are at a point now where what they're doing is so obvious and so wrong that they have to hide it from the American people. And that's the now the job of the United States media. Sadly, we're now in a country where if you have an alternative perspective and you make an attempt to voice that on social media, you'll be censored. Mainstream media, you won't get back on anymore, as you and I both well know. So the media, they're just cover men for these, kind of like a mob lawyer. They're there to cover the crimes.
It does seem, though, recently we've never gone as far as we've gone, especially in the case of Russia. The numbers are astronomical. The assets taken from oligarchs. I'm no fan of oligarchs, trust me, but I think we got just as many in this country as they do over there. But the fact that we're just taking private assets away from countries and people seems to me like almost a bridge too far. And where will this lead? I'm concerned. It's what we're going to talk about with Garland Nixon when we come back. You stay there, Garland. We'll continue this conversation on the other side. By the way, if you want to continue this conversation, we can do so on Twitter or X or whatever you call it these days. My handle, Rick Sanchez TV. That's Rick Sanchez TV. Let me know what you think, whether you agree or disagree. I'll see you there. So when we come back, the money that used to be in the Bank of Afghanistan, who does it belong to now? The U.S. or Afghanistan? So let's continue with this. Last year, President Biden announced that he was transferring $3.5 billion from Afghanistan to a trust fund established in Washington. The president said that he was doing so because he wanted it to be available for humanitarian aid and for possible legal claims from the families of the victims of 9/11, something that happened more than 20 years ago, right? So you have to ask yourself, we have to ask ourselves, is it our place to take their money? And we're back with Garland Nixon, veteran radio and political analyst, the voice of the Critical Hour on Sputnik. And I guess we can't have this conversation without cutting to the chase, and that is the currency of what's happening right now. $600 billion in Russian assets have been frozen by the United States and the United Kingdom and Canada. That is an astronomical number, $600 billion. I don't even know where to begin, Garland, with that number.
Well, I think it reflects a desperation. It's kind of like a person who yells. You know, you've heard the infamous analogy of someone who yells to get what they want. They don't get what they want. And the only thing they know how to do is yell louder and louder. And the louder they yell, the less they get what they want. The U.S. empire went after Russia. It was a full spectrum attack, diplomatically, economically, et cetera. When the economic situation didn't pan out the way they had suspected, they decided, okay, we'll take more. We'll get more if we can just take their money. I think some of it also is out of pure anger and emotion, the anger at Russia to have the temerity to exist and to try to, expand their economic power in the world, which every country has a right to do. So they're angry. They're trying to take them out. They don't know what to do, and they're just going to take more and more. And of course, let's not forget, there's the issue of greed here. Look at what happened to Libya when the NATO overthrew Libya, like somewhere between $40 and $70 billion from a small country like Libya, their sovereign wealth fund disappeared. But it didn't disappear. It was stolen. So I would imagine a part of this is simply greed, and they're going to steal some of this, and the criminals will divide it amongst themselves as best they can, but there will be a severe price to pay.
But it's easy to just say empire and criminals and all that thing, but we're not talking about criminals and we're not talking about the empires. We're talking about a nation, the United States of America, Washington, one of the most admired countries on the face of the earth, acting in a belligerent way. And no one seems to be checking them. And you know, aside from the countries that are being victimized in this case. And that's just easy to do. You just say, well, it's Putin. You don't need to listen to him. He's Hitler. He's a criminal, as they often do. It has to go beyond name calling and this type of activity. I guess I'm looking for a solution from you. Is there one?
Well, I'll put it like this. You know, the nature of the world orders that is that a solution is arising even as we speak. Remember, you know, difficult times never changes a person. It exposes their initial nature. So what we're seeing, this is what the empire is. People for many years thought that, you know, in the United States felt that they were living on a luxury liner. And the reality is they were living on a pirate ship. They were on the Jolly Roger, going around the world stealing everybody's stuff. It is being exposed now. But the nature of a world order is, as I said, you have BRICS, you have a Shanghai Cooperation Order in recognizing that the U.S.-led economic infrastructure is untrustworthy. It's just natural. Other countries are saying we need to build some alternative infrastructures. People who invest capital, what do they want mostly? They want stability and security with their investments. So this is just natural economic rules that happen. People are seeking an alternative method to have stability for their investments. They see the U.S. will steal it, and so they're going to build something else to that where they can put the money in and they can be assured in the long term that their funds will be secure.
This new situation we're now dealing with Israel and Hamas. And obviously, you know, Israel is killing 3, 4, 5 times as many people as Hamas killed. And what Hamas did was wrong. But what Israel is now doing with the cooperation of the United States, with the assistance of the United States, is being seen certainly throughout the world and certainly in the Arab world as just dastardly at this point. This balance that you and I just talked about, where we see Russia, Saudi Arabia, China, Iran, even previously to a certain extent, Israel. What is going to happen to that consortium now with this new wrinkle, with this new potential escalation in the Middle East?
Well, I think what's going to happen, and, you know, I've talked to journalists who are based in the Middle East, and what they're telling me is that the people in the Muslim world, in the Middle East, now clearly understand that they have to turn to the East. They have to turn to Russia, China, even India. They have to turn away from the West. They don't trust the West anymore. They see him as literally see them, the West, as their enemies. And they of course, this is a very dangerous situation. They want this situation to, you know, to be alleviated and dealt with. But that's it. This is the final nail in the economic coffin of the let's just say the ties between the West and the Middle East. When this is
shakes out, will this empower the West? Let me ask it this way. Is it possible that this can do anything but empower that new consortium, as I call it, these countries who used to be outliers who are now coming together and pushing back on the U.S. global economic system?
Well, it will absolutely it will empower them very much, because the issue, if you look at Europe, what is the issue with Europe? Does Europe have economic power, industrial power, etc.? But what they don't have is the natural resources. And what the new group of powers that's coming together, what the new world order is really doing, it's bringing together the countries that have not been deindustrialized. It's bringing together China, Russia, India, the industrial powers with the powers of that have the natural resources, the OPECs, Africa, etc. So they're creating a future environment, an incubator for great economic power. And the traditional powers are making enemies of them, that so there will be no trust to do deals. They just feel like we've got to work together, we've got to build together, we got to save our money together. I think that's what you're going to see, a complete lack of trust and a dissolution of the current world order that will be considerably sooner than we thought it would be.
Garland Nixon, veteran radio and political analyst and host of the Critical Hour on Sputnik Radio. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
So before we go, I want to remind you of our mission. It's simple, really. What we want to do is kind of de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these little boxes where we only think our truth matters. Truths don't live in boxes. Truth is everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez. And I'll be looking for you right here, where I hope to provide a direct impact.